Northern California, 1897. The boom and bust of the gold rush had subsided as people settled into an entirely new era of modest expansion. Cities like San Francisco and Los Angeles were on the rise, and so too were stories of strange happenings across the state. Long before the sightings of Kenneth Arnold, or the discovery at Roswell, there were reports of strange craft which seemed to defy explanation. Objects that straddled the line between human technological abilities and the fantastical devices thought only to be found amongst the pages of a strange aerial fantasy. These were known as mystery airships. In the late 1800s across the United States, there occurred multiple sightings by hundreds of witnesses of massive, unidentified craft described as airships, hovering over crowds, emanating strange sounds, and even traveling at speeds up to 150 miles per hour. Not only did the feats of these craft defy explanation, but these dirigible-like objects seemed to appear and disappear like some kind of aerial phantom amongst the clouds, leading some to strange speculations as to their true origins. It was popular belief that the mystery airship was possibly some product of an inventor or genius who was not ready to make knowledge of their creation public. But as sightings dotted the country from coast to coast, the story only became more strange. Could all of this be chalked up to advanced aviation well before the Wright brothers? Early cases of foreign spies and espionage? Or even perhaps some kind of early extraterrestrial mimicry of technology soon to be employed? Join us on Into the Portal as we explore early sightings from coast to coast for part one of two of the Mystery Phantom Airship of 1897.
Hello, I'm Amber Ray.
And I'm Andrew McKay.
And welcome back into the portal.
Your gateway to the bizarre.
2024 edition.
2024, here we are.
First episode.
It's a ways past January, but that's okay. We are finally back.
And we're back, as Forrest would say.
Forrest
absolutely. It's been a hot sec, eh? More than a hot sec. It's been a few months.
We're still living in Nanaimo. We're still grinding through this the island lifestyle and...
Yeah, I don't know if most people would describe it. They're like, oh yeah, the island's so laid back, right? And it's just chill zone, unlike the rest of the world. And you're like, actually, not when you're doing a master's program and me doing my program and trying to scrape by and have time to do stuff like this.
Definitely. So we've missed you guys. We've definitely missed you guys. And Amber, you had a shout out because you've been re-inspired in many different ways here getting back on the mic.
I have been. I'm actually in the middle of my summer practicum. So I'm back in the field. I'm doing horticultural things. And that means I have a lot of time to listen to podcasts, which is really great. So I've been getting into a lot of our classic favorites. Like, I don't give some shout outs here. Obviously, Astonishing Legends. You know, I just mentioned Forrest right off the bat because those guys... As the Podfathers, they're doing it. They've always been doing it the best. And it's just been so great to get back to that. Obviously, there's been so many others, too.
The Kryptonaut Boys. We listen to those guys every time we go to get Chinese food because there's this great Chinese food place, but it's like 25 minutes outside of town where we live right now. So Rob, Chris, and Mark, that's who we listen to when we're going to get Chinese food. These are the shows that... inspired us when we first got started, especially Astonishing Legends, because they were around for a few years, and that's what we listened to working at the winery, if you guys remember, way back when, if you've been with Into the Portal since the beginning in 2018. And so we kind of feel like this is a little bit of a strange sort of rebirth in a way now in 2024.
Yes.
Living in a new place, doing different things, but still always paying attention to the paranormal, you know, interested in all that stuff. And you know what? I have one more shout out before we get into this.
Yeah,
Shay Steingass. Shout out to Shay. who we introduced on our show several times in the years past as Shay Conger. Mm-hmm. And she has been the resident marine biologist on the Proof is Out There show, mm-hmm. on the History Channel. And she is just killing it. Love seeing her on there, and what a fun show.
Big shout out to Shay. You have been doing an amazing job. I know shows like that can be tough when they, like, they present a bunch of different things to these, like, you know, their experts, and the way that they can clip things can oftentimes, like, your original message could get lost. But I think she's always so diligent and so clear, and just, she's so intelligent. I love listening to her. So yeah, big shout out.
100%. Mm-hmm. And what a well done show. So that's also been kind of getting us back into the paranormal, and I really want to get Shay back on into mm-hmm. the portal. And we've communicated with her a bit, so definitely she will be back on. So stay tuned for that, for some weird marine biology paranormal awesomeness.
And I guess there would just be one more shout out, hey, to the author of the book that we are currently going to be looking at for this episode.
Absolutely.
None other than our good friend Adam Benedict.
Yes.
We're at the Pine Barrens Institute.
Yes, a lodge member of mm-hmm. our one single meeting that's been published. But you know what? The lodge is still a thing, if y'all remember that as well.
Oh, it's there.
Adam, shout out, buddy. And he will also be back on the show very soon as well.
I hope so, yeah.
So stay tuned for that. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm ready to jump into this because I feel like this is a perfect topic for us to ease into 2024 for Into the Portal's timeline. Mm-hmm. It's something we've been talking about for years. It's a classic historical mystery, especially in North America, and I'm really excited to get into it. So today we're talking about the Phantom Airship, or as Amber likes to call it around the house, the Phantom Airship Flap of the 1890s.
We're both debating what flap actually means.
Right.
My definition is, like, you know, it's a flap. It's a phenomena or a series of events that comes out of nothing and then quickly disappears or dies down. Kind of like a flap of birds, and then
that makes sense to me.
But not when you look it up online.
No,
there's a bunch of different
but you do hear it in phrases where that makes perfect sense, right? And then I sort of was like, well, what is a rash of sightings then? Does a flap lead to a rash?
That's when you need cream.
Flaps need, yeah. At that point, you might have to consult a dermatologist. Let's get into this, though. We're dealing with some very strange phenomena in the 1890s. And this was actually something that was happening throughout the century, but we're focusing on a particular decade. In the late 1800s, across the entire United States, there occurred multiple sightings by dozens of different witnesses throughout various different states of utterly bizarre objects in the sky. These objects defied explanation, because they were essentially beyond their time. Massive flying machines, the likes of which the world's greatest inventors had supposedly yet to achieve. And so witnesses documented seeing strange, mostly oblong or cigar-shaped objects, also mysterious bright lights, unexplainable sounds, even voices emanating from the clouds, and of course these objects emerging from the skies. I think the strangest of all of these that we are very excited to get into are the reports of humanoid entities piloting these bizarre, unexplained, dirigible-like craft. So humanoid, not human, but human-like.
Or could be human. Come on. You just like to skip to right to the...
That's just how some of the stories read. That's just how... this is verbatim what some of the stories say.
And some people thought it was the end of days, so...
That too. Mm-hmm. You're flying over a couple of churches, they might be pretty concerned about some certain things happening. No, but this is how... We're gonna go through some stories. It's definitely some high strangeness, and there's so many different angles of how this could go.
And it's all sourced from Oddities in Print.
Absolutely.
Which is by, like we said, by our good friend Adam Benedict, researched and compiled exclusively by him. This features over, what is it, almost 600 pages worth of newspaper stories from years, like times of lore.
All chronological order.
Of lore. Your and lore.
it is an unbelievable compilation. Yeah. It's available on Amazon. Mm-hmm. We've shouted it out before. It's just endless inspiration.
What does it say here? What's the byline? It says, a multitude of bizarre occurrences, peculiar people, and unexplained events from newspapers of yore.
Amazing.
There we go. Mm-hmm.
So go pick up this book. It's a must-have in everyone's library for
Definitely.
Sure.
Definitely.
Now, the cases that we're talking about today, or this case in general, is about, of course, unidentified aircraft. Now, I used the word dirigible a second ago. Essentially, that is
the Zeppelin-like craft is the first thing that pops into my mind. It's blimp-like. We have a specific definition in a sec, but just as we jump into it.
I think it's a bit further down there. It was something like that, though. Yeah, a flying object that is motorized and steerable.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when we think about Zeppelins or, you know, in modern times, like, you know, the Goodyear blimp going over a football game or something, like, these things move pretty slow, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. And that is one strange thing about these cases, as you'll see when we get in, that speed is a strange factor here. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about unidentified aircraft, often seen as simply strange traveling lights that appeared where they didn't make a lot of sense, different colors. And obviously this is well before mm-hmm. airplanes. This is before the Wright brothers, you know, had started doing what they were doing at the turn of the century. Other times it was seen as a solid object, actual craft that thousands of people across the U.S. witnessed, you know, mostly at nighttime. So this is sort of something we can discuss mm-hmm. as well.
Or even in like the dusky hours. So like leading into night.
Twilight.
Exactly. Yeah. And sometimes it was interesting because the lights emanating from the craft often obscured the actual craft itself. And you would see like people describe like a big shadow or something like that. So it was like a little less like defined.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's cool because, these reports of alleged crewmen and pilots were, like you said, Andrew, described as human-looking or sounding, depending on the context and visibility. And at times, there were witnesses that claimed that they could possibly be from Mars or from the heavens, like I said, as like this signal of the end of days, so to speak.
Sure.
I think there's one that mentions a Pentecostal church in particular, but we will get to that. But
before you continue, I just want to emphasize this because I feel like it's so significant just put yourself in the shoes of anybody witnessing this, right? It's the 1890s. You've never even seen an airplane. Most people hadn't seen, you know, test craft in smaller versions of what we're talking about today. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like the end of days, I can totally see some people that are leaning in that direction already.
It's not like today where it's like you have the internet and you can go and like Google this stuff. Like it would have been like, you know, privy to scientific circles,
exactly.
to inventors and like, you know, people like in government, like who knows?
So this is before the UFO flaps your term, right? So it's like just to kind of just, you know, plant that seed for everyone listening. This would be very I'm joking. But Amber's term for the day today. But just to plant that seed, because this would have been so bizarre to be witnessing in the skies.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So let's get into that. Because witnesses, like we've already said here, they described different... it was often the same shape if they did see a discernible shape. Mm. But these ships were roughly described as being about 150 to 200 feet long. The speeds, as we mentioned, could be quite... I don't know. I feel like some reports were a little less egregious than this. Like here in our notes, it says 135 to 150 miles per hour.
Miles per hour.
Which obviously could be greatly exaggerated based on where you're observing from in the skies. I find distance and speed very hard to judge personally, especially like we see a lot of craft taking off in the bay here, like float planes and stuff. It looks like they're going like, to me, it looks like they're like 20
Yeah, it looks like you could run past these things, basically.
I'm like, wait a second. So, you know, you have to take that with like a boulder sized grain of salt, these sort of notes. But like, I think there was one story that mentioned it was going 30 to 60 knots an hour, but I could have that wrong. We'll get into that specifically.
Miles, kilometers, knots. There's many different. Yeah.
Yeah. But the important thing to note here is that airships at this time were generally smaller. So they weren't 150 to 200 feet long. That's pretty big.
Massive.
And they were moving at speeds at about 5 to 7 miles an hour on average. I guess if there was a big gust of wind or an updraft or something, maybe. And the other thing that we have to mention, they describe a very bright light above or aboard the craft that was distinctly brighter than stars, moon, planets, or otherwise in the night sky. I think we want to note, too, that right off the top here that there were some... They could potentially, like, these are all sourced from newspapers, like local newspaper sources, and these were scattered throughout, you know, the different states, as we mentioned here. So it could be multiple sightings of different objects. It could be, it seems to be the same thing, though. So, like, we just kind of want to make that point because it could have been in part, we've talked about yellow journalism in the past and sensationalism just created by the press who, you know, have every reason to do so. They're selling newspapers, they're trying to make a living here.
Sure.
But we're kind of positing that this could be more than just yellow journalism, hyping up these accounts that, you know, they did range in geography. We're talking the Pacific Coast, California, zigzagging sort of haphazardly eastward, kind of like does exactly that. It zigzags a tiny bit just over into the heartland of America, where we have sightings in Kansas City and all this stuff. And this is happening over a series of 6 months.
It sounds like something that easily could be what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple different things, potentially yellow journalism coming into it too. We talked about that Kincaid's Cave, like all throughout the 1800s mm-hmm. and into the turn of the century. But the zigzag, the actual path, the flight path that we'll talk about, Amber, you plotted it out on a map the other day.
And I can post that
and
too.
We will. Yeah, we can post that for sure. To me, it just seems like there's definitely more going on here than just, because some of these stories are pretty basic. Like, they don't read as really sensationalist,
mm-hmm.
Like you would expect from a yellow journalism article. Mm-hmm. And I think
seems like an investigative type.
Exactly.
Like, series of reports. You know what I mean?
But I mean, let's let the listeners be the judge as well as we get into this. I think yes. We're ready to crack into the story, our first story of the day today, mm-hmm. from the first wave.
Yes. So okay. The first wave. So this occurred in November of 1896. It was reported in Sacramento. And this is by the San Francisco Call newspaper. The byline reads, so the actual title is, Claim They Saw a Flying Airship. And the byline says, Strange Tale of Sacramento Men Not Addicted to Provocation. Okay, so these are reliable witnesses.
Indeed.
They viewed an aerial courser as it passed over the city at night. And, you know, old-timey newspaper talk, courser just means like a ship of some kind, some sort of object or
I'm sure that everyone that celebrates Christmas reads that story every year before the night of, right?
What? Really? That's
through coursers they came.
Oh, I didn't know that was in that
It's in
story.
The night before.
Well,
wait a second here. The night before Christmas? Is that what that's called?
Yeah, I think so.
Good heavens.
Well, clearly we know our Christmas
baby. This is not a Christmas episode.
No.
Okay.
All right. So the story goes on to say, declare they heard voices of those aboard joined in merry chorus. All right, so Sacramento, California, November 17th, a vast amount of excitement was created amongst the residents in the outskirts of the city tonight by the appearance of what they claim to have been an airship, which, seemingly under perfect control, passed over the city, going in the direction of San Francisco. The sky was obscured by heavy clouds, and it was impossible to ascertain the shape and size of the aerial conveyance, presuming it to be such. But the onlookers followed its course by the night's lights displayed, which were about twice the brilliancy and size of an arc light. In speaking of the appearance of the reputed ship, an eyewitness of undoubted veracity said, "When my attention was called to the traveling light, it was, I should judge, about 1,000 feet high. But as it approached the city limits, it arose to probably an elevation of 2,000 feet. When I first saw it, it was approaching from a northeasterly direction, and on arriving at the city limits, it bore off to the south until passed over the city, when it turned towards the southwest as if resuming its course towards San Francisco."
Hmm.
"When the airship passed over the streetcar company's barn, a crowd of people, of employees, came out, and they claimed that they distinctly heard people's voices singing in a chorus, a rattling song, which gradually died away in the distance. The lights of this mysterious visitant were visible for upwards of 30 minutes until they passed out of sight. A lineman in the employ of the Postal Telegraph Service claims to have seen the same visitant at about 9 o'clock in the vicinity of Soussine on Sunday evening. The impression here seems to be that someone has solved the mystery of aerial navigation and is conducting his experiments at night in order to escape impertinent curiosity."
Very interesting.
"Men in charge of East Park, which lies outside the city limits, state that as the airship passed over the park, the voices of men who seem to be disputing as to whether they should cause their conveyance to rise higher could be heard. The lights then rose rapidly into the air and passed on."
End Curious.
Quote. Yeah, that's our first story of the evening.
So this kicked off the events of the late 1890s here. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, you've got it. There's a few sort of key notes from this story. I think the voices of merriment and the singing is very curious to me because there isn't any further explanation. Like, were they, is this Was this sort of one of the early experiences of hearing something that was maybe like, what were they speaking in English even?
I would imagine, probably.
I mean,
they didn't describe anything of like a foreign sort of a,
right?
You know, and if they could hear, it says here, they seem to be disputing whether they should cause the conveyance to rise higher. So clearly they could understand what they were saying
because
they were
sense.
In an argument about
Indeed.
What they should
that's,
do.
That's very true.
That which seems very human to me. So this whole first encounter does appear to be of human origins, in my opinion, but
Indeed.
Of which type of human origins, again, kind of comes down to the debate. Like, is this a secret government project? Is this, like, some inventor that's trying to have, like, a some sort of, like, you know, covert party, or like, you know, like, because of the singing, or
covert
is it like,
party.
Yeah, know.
That's sort of an interesting thing, because it's like, okay, well, let's do test flights at night, if this is some sort of, like, you know, Tesla-esque inventor, you know, creating some massive dirigible craft, and then
it's the most exclusive club of the 1890s.
Explanation.
The Mile High Club.
The Mile High Club. I just don't. Does it make sense that you would be doing test flights at night, even though you don't want to be seen? I mean, I
well,
feel
yeah.
like that's
if you want to keep your technology secret and you don't want people taking pictures potentially or jotting down notes
right.
and trying to recreate it or like
it just
knows?
It just seems like
trying to get patents.
I wonder if the Wright brothers did that. You know what I'm saying? I just
I
feel
know.
Like if you're testing flying early, you know,
yeah.
decades of this type of technology that, yeah, you don't want people to see it, but that might be like a fairly risky endeavor. You don't have GP, you don't even know where you are. There's nothing, you don't have, I guess you just have a compass and that's what you're using. And a
yeah.
flashlight of some kind, a kerosene lantern.
It's not the safest, but you know, people did a lot of crazy things.
That
and
is true.
To.
This is true.
Yeah.
Strangely, almost 20 years to the day, 20 years ago, before, prior to this, to the day, in 1876, there was a very similar sighting that actually was sort of like potentially one of the inspirations for the yellow journalism angle of this story, if you wanted to take it that way, because the San Francisco Evening, or sorry, excuse me, not San Francisco, the Sacramento Evening Bee newspaper, love that name, reported something very similar between 6 and 7 p.m., and it was on November 17th of 1876, so I find that so curious that it was almost to the day. It may, you know, perhaps that leads to suggest that it actually is associated with some mysterious inventor and they have some sort of like an anniversary kind of thing happening here or whatever, because that also mentioned that it was an arc lamp type of light
okay.
that was propelling this mysterious force.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very similarly, many different people saw this craft. And this story actually gets conflated with the one that you just read.
Oh.
Very often, where they read as exactly the same, or people flip-flop them around, and they're not sure which one's which. And it's just kind of odd, because it is almost exactly to the day, 20 years
interesting.
Prior.
Well, a good thing we have the exact original report,
Indeed.
Thanks to Adam.
Indeed. But we're sticking with the 1890s, and over the next 6 months following this initial sighting that Amber just went through here, the sightings would continue to move roughly eastward in this very strange zigzagging fashion across the country, and reports would even reach as far as Chicago. And then sort of to the tail end of April 1897, it all sort of seemed to stop. It came to relatively an abrupt stop, unless you want to go across the pond, because this continued to happen in other places around the world as well. But we're sticking with the United States. So let's stick out west. So now we have the craft kind of making an odd westernly zigzag before it continues east. The title of this article was Saw the Mystic Flying Light, published in the San Francisco Call on November 22nd of 1896. So in Oddities in Print, this was the title, Oaklanders Believe an Airship Hovered Above Them. So not just traveling at a sort of solid, steady speed, but actually hovered over top of them, which is kind of curious. We
yeah.
can get into that. It was headed for San Francisco and seemed about to come to Earth.
Whoa, so it possibly landed.
Very, very interesting. So it reads as follows. Someone must be operating an airship in this portion of the state. Twice within the past 6 weeks, it has been seen by reliable residents of Oakland, and on each occasion it has been presented the same appearance. 6 weeks ago, a young lady was riding a wheel on Telegraph Avenue. Riding a singular wheel? She's riding a unicycle?
When I read that, I was like, I wonder if she's riding a unicycle. Like one of those huge ones from back in the day? Or if
I get it. So it's got that tiny little wheel on the back and the big wheel on the front.
I don't know. I was kind of confused.
Okay, she's riding a singular wheel here. Okay.
Just one wheel.
On Telegraph Avenue. When she saw a strange-looking object in the sky, it carried a powerful headlight sufficiently strong to send out long, bright rays into the darkness. It appeared to be going in a westerly direction and seemed to be gradually descending as it disappeared over St. Mary's College. She reported the affair to her brother, who is a motorman on the cemetery branch of Piedmont Road. Okay. Last night, a little after 5 o'clock, as a crowded car was going out toward Piedmont, the attention of the passengers was attracted to a peculiar-looking contrivance high up in the sky. The most peculiar feature of it was a powerful headlight and another light which seemed to be in the bottom of the machine and to shine directly onto the earth. Interesting, like a spotlight type of deal.
Yes.
Or tractor beam. No, let's continue. It came into view from the direction of East Oakland, passed over Piedmont, and according to the story of the passengers, seemed to descend in such a manner as to indicate that it would land somewhere in San Francisco. Many of the passengers took up their morning newspaper today, expecting to see full description of the peculiar object as they had seen so plainly, and were surprised and disappointed to find no report whatsoever of it. They were so convinced that it must have landed across the bay that some of them telephoned to San Francisco last night and made inquiries regarding it. As nothing was known of it, it is presumed that it must have changed its course and landed somewhere else, for nothing can persuade those who saw it that it was not a genuine airship under full control. That's kind of curious that it wouldn't have been... I mean, somebody would have seen it that was a newspaperman. You'd think that would have got into this and been jumping right on an article of some kind.
Again, this is the times of yore. Things don't travel as fast. We got smoke signals. We got carrier pigeons. We got, you know, we got the fast, what was it? The fast rail car of mail. That's what we got here.
That's what we got. Continuing. All those who saw this strange object agree in its description and declare that it closely resembles the illustration that appeared in The Call last Thursday of an airship that scores of people witnessed as it passed over Sacramento last Wednesday night. Some of them distinctly saw the propelling arms and declare that they were in motion.
Ooh.
Like flapping wings.
That's really cool.
That is something we need to dig into.
Hmm.
But all are positive that the machine was brilliantly lighted and that the lower light shed a large arc on the earth as it passed over, while the headlight could be seen for a great distance ahead of the machine. So it's extremely powerful.
Hmm.
One of the most mystified observers of the airship was Charles H. Ellis, the armorer of companies A and F. Interesting. Mr. Ellis is a middle-aged man and very deliberate in his manner of expression, and one not likely to be easily deceived. He declared this evening that he was as skeptical as a man could be when he first read about the Sacramento airship. He also declares that he had no alternative to believe his own eyesight. "I was going home to my dinner about 5:30 last night," he said, "and was in the neighborhood of 24th Street and New Broadway, when I saw a strange-looking thing in the sky. It was coming from the eastward, and at first I could see nothing but a bright light. When I first saw it, the two lights appeared to be one, and I thought it was a brilliant meteor. It was getting dusk, but the sky was clouded and just dark enough to permit anyone to see plainly. The sky was sufficiently dark to make a background which would render any such object visible." So he's basically just trying to say, like, there was no way of being mistaken about what he was seeing here.
Yeah.
"As it came nearer, I could see that there was some dark object along with the light. When it was nearly overhead, I could clearly distinguish that it somewhat resembled a balloon traveling on end with a bright light ahead of it and another one beneath it."
Okay. So that's like navigational lights, seemingly. And that shape, we'll get more into that shape because that is significant.
And he comes back to this strange possible other appendages on this as well, because he also goes on to mention that, "and with that appeared to be wings, both before and behind the light. It was at a great height above the earth, probably 1,000 feet, but not so high as to make it impossible to distinguish what it was. I did not want to believe that it was an airship, as I had regarded the previous report as something of a joke. This time, however, I had no alternative. I had to believe what I saw." That's curious. I mean, so he... Yeah, I mean, they're trying to... Yeah, the wing thing, I mean, that's very steampunk.
It is, yeah, and I'm just looking up steampunk airships right now, because, like, we forgot to mention this, but I'm actually currently building a 3D puzzle that is an airship, and it looks like, yeah, it's got four wings off the back of it, and they're, like, it's kind of, like, in formation, right? So there's two horizontal and two vertical. And I'm like totally pitched. I'm like, oh my God.
And it's very serendipitous too, because we didn't even really plan that.
No, I just
for this episode. It just happened. And here we are. Yeah. You're building an airship and we're talking about airships.
I know. It was a little gift, end of semester gift to myself.
I love that.
And we'll have to post a picture once it's done because it's really cool.
Okay. Let's continue with this airship here as it passes over St. Mary's College. So the speaker continues. This was Charles H. Ellis. As soon as it passed over St. Mary's College, it appeared to descend gradually, but regularly, okay, as though under perfect control, and it disappeared into the direction of San Francisco. Of course, it was too dark and the machine was too far away to distinguish anything like people or hear any sounds such as were heard in Sacramento, but there was no doubt in my mind that it was an airship supplied with electric lights and was well manned. So this is like a large deck that would actually be able to house a large crew. That's not something that was available at the time.
Actually, debatable. I have an example. I'll pull up.
Love it. Love it. I absolutely love that. Another witness to the visit of the airship, Shelby Yost, a motorman, again, of the Piedmont Road and a member of the Oakland Guard. He was a little behind the time and was taking his car toward Piedmont, trying to recover a few minutes he was behind. As he passed 13th Street, a little boy stood in the road and cried, "Gee whiz, what's that?"
I totally picture this scene. It's like a Norman Gee Rockwell whiz. Painting. Like, he's just looking up at the sky.
The passengers heard it and immediately looked at the direction in the sky toward which the boy was pointing. They had no difficulty in seeing the airship. "When I looked ahead," said Mr. Yost today, "I was mystified, and I may as well confess, I didn't like to admit to myself that I was suddenly going crazy, but really for a moment I did wonder if my senses had deserted me. The passengers all reached out to look overhead, so when they requested me to stop the car, that they might all look, I was practically focused to oblige them."
This guy, essentially what a motor man is like a cab driver. Yeah. So he's like, so essentially the passengers just in case anyone didn't.
People speak in strange cadence even in the 1890s.
Positions, jobs were strange. Like you said, the armorer of like, so like literally that guy's like, he's looking after like the armaments, like the
guns
and probably other things.
But he was probably,
if anyone has any more knowledge on that, please let me know.
He was probably a bunch of things though. He's probably like a locksmith too and like other stuff.
Oh, maybe like a millwright.
Yeah. All right, so Mr. Yost has pulled over. They got out in the road and looked up at the airship, the most surprised crowd I had ever saw in my entire life. There it was, sure enough, right overhead, and traveling at a good rate, with its light blazing away and the most uncanny-looking thing I ever saw. Airship, or anything else, it was the most remarkable-looking object. I am at a loss right now to convince myself that I actually saw it. It was altogether a wonderful sight, and nobody could have ever made me believe that I would ever see such a thing. It was perfectly clear, and not only I, but all the passengers saw it and watched it until it disappeared. He continues, "I thought it must have landed across the bay, and I was somewhat surprised this morning to see that no mention was made of it in the papers, once again.
Mm-hmm.
I would really like to have that thing found, so that I could satisfy myself as to how it worked, for a more interesting thing I have never seen." Miss Hegstrom, another witness who resides on Telegraph Avenue, saw the same object about 6 weeks ago. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The features that impressed her the most was the bright light, which she distinctly saw. And on returning home, she told her brother of what she had seen, but nothing more was thought until she had read recently that a similar object had been seen in another part of the state. Charles Hagstrom, the brother of the young lady who witnessed this queer object in the sky, is also in the employ of the Piedmont and Mountain View Railways. He said, quote, "When my sister first told me what she had seen, I treated it as a joke and placed little credence in her story, believing that she had seen nothing more mysterious than a falling star or meteor." Strange phrasing
doesn't
back in these days.
Doesn't believe her.
"When I heard the same thing had been seen elsewhere last week and heard again last night of what had been seen in this part of town, I am now convinced that my sister saw the same thing. I have talked to several people today who had witnessed the object last night, and they are all confident that it was nothing more nor less than a genuine airship." W.J. Rhoda and his wife, who reside at a grocery store at 2042 Broadway, were also witnesses to the strange aerial visitor. So lots of different corroborating evidence for this one. They said, quote, "When we first saw it, we thought it was a balloon, And if it were not for the bright light, I should still be inclined to think it was a peculiarly shaped balloon and nothing else. But I never knew of a balloon to carry bright lights and travel at nighttime the way that it did. I could not see any fans myself, but others saw that they most undoubtedly saw propellers, which sent the thing along as it passed over it angled downward. Interesting. So it's like mm-hmm. it's like being propelled up and forward. That's interesting, sort of helicopter-like technology. And it kept on the same direction. It should have landed somewhere across the bay. That's what everyone is saying in all of these reports. I at once concluded that it was the same machine that had been seen in Sacramento. I believe that airships will be brought into perfection, and I wouldn't be the least bit surprised to hear that someone had already built a practical machine of this kind and was operating it within this neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So that's just cool. So we have this, you know, like the continuation of the flap, so to speak. But then we also have a little bit of like backtracking 6 weeks before. So in my mind, I'm thinking like there must have been some sort of secret project going on, like in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
Probably government funded. Might have been some crazy, like, you know, James Bond-esque sort of like madman inventor doing it on his own terms or whatever. Like, I don't know. That's kind of the vibe I'm getting.
I know that's definitely the vibe you're getting. And mm-hmm. I'm getting that as well when we're reading through these first accounts. I mean, that's definitely what it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
It's when we start zigzagging across the country where things get a little bit hairy potentially. But maybe mm-hmm. this program is ubiquitous and it's existing in different places. It's definitely early days of potential espionage. But that is a really interesting angle for us to dive down. But, I mean, this second case, I mean, we're in the same year. Mm-hmm. You know, just a few days after the initial report corroborating it.
Yep.
A lot of these witnesses are actual individuals.
Yeah.
And that can be found on Ancestry.com and in other documents and things like that.
Not that we did that.
I did indeed actually do that for a handful of these individuals.
Yeah, you did.
And I actually do have a couple specifics in other stories down below. I didn't want to do it for every single one. That would ridiculous.
Just a couple. And I love how we get this, like, yeah, we get very specific descriptions of, again, like this, the shape of, like, you know, some people thought it was like a balloon with pointed ends, which does actually corroborate with some technology that existed from the era of the 1850s, so a couple decades previous. But we'll get into that once we start discussing
in theories. Aesthetic only, though, not yes. in what it was doing.
Well, yeah, no, totally.
150 like the miles per hour, all that stuff.
Yeah, and again, that could be an exaggeration as well. We don't know. But, yeah, no, I think this is a really cool sort of continuation. I love how it's in the same area, too, because it really speaks to the idea that this was a localized phenomena, at least until we start to get into these.
Until it's not,
yeah. So we're actually going to skip forward. So these first two accounts were from November. And this next account takes us into the heartland of America here. And the title of the article was Mysterious Light in the Sky. It was reported by The Sun on April 2nd, but the actual event occurred in Kansas City, Missouri on April 1st. So a good April Fool's joke, but again, it wasn't reported on April Fool's, so I'm not thinking this is like one of those articles that they just throw in there as like a little Easter egg kind of thing.
Yeah.
The byline reads, "It was first seen on the Pacific coast and has now appeared above Kansas City." So immediately we're getting the connection from the two previous accounts that were in California. All right, the article goes as follows. The mysterious light that has been seen in the sky in several parts of the West during the past few weeks appeared above Kansas City early this evening, and soon the whole population was watching it. The light is as great as that produced by 20 stars, white, clear, and steady, and may be seen at a long distance. It is believed that it is produced by a powerful searchlight set in an airship. It is directed towards the Earth and is traveling east at the rate of 60 miles an hour. Okay, so a little bit slower than what we previously referenced. The appearance of the light caused great excitement. It soon became known throughout the city that it could be seen. People hurried to the housetops, the streets, and the public squares. The sidewalks were crowded with people craning their necks to watch the light. Passengers on the street railways caught the infection and soon were hanging out the car windows to watch the light. It has been reported from a number of places west of here that this strange light had appeared in the heavens. It was first seen on the Pacific coast about 5 months ago. In the places where it was first sighted, it caused a religious sensation, many of the more ignorant people believing that the end of the world had come.
Interesting.
I love that. So yeah, no, this is interesting. So we have like about a 5 month sort of hiatus or gap, I guess. And the press is still, they're latching onto this. It's very consistent with the previous reports.
Yeah.
The light, the direction of the light being faced towards the Earth, the idea that it's obviously in the sky. Like, there's a lot of consistency for sure.
I think the... Sorry, did this one mention hovering at all, or was that just the previous?
No, it didn't mention hovering. It's just that it's been seen in the sky. And that it basically, it seems to me like it was traveling above, like it does mention here, it's traveling east at a rate of about 60 miles. So it's not really hovering. It's traveling.
I do enjoy some of the language obviously used in this that sort of leads us now in 2024 down certain rabbit holes, because we have, you know, read lots of different UFO accounts, and we you know, we think about UAPs and stuff like that. And like the idea of, and sorry, I just want to kind of go back to the last story that I'm stuck on that idea of hovering a little bit. Because that is fascinating.
I'm hovering on the hovering.
I find that absolutely fascinating, because obviously these craft would have always been very subtly moving forward. That was how they were. That's how they propelled. Like, unless you were tethered to the ground.
Oh.
Like, I don't think they had just the straight. I guess, I suppose they could have for shorter periods of time.
Yeah, but, and I'm sure if like they had their altitude set like an air correctly, like a and they hot didn't air have any sort of wind, like, you know, it'd be easy to kind of just keep us steady.
So it's like, in actuality, what I'm saying is actually probably more evidence to suggest that it is a slow moving man built dirigible, because it is in like appears to be hovering, but really it's just sort of like slowly, not caught in a quick airstream, and it's not cranked up the speed or anything like that.
Maybe.
But I mean, the wings, the hovering, this is all strange.
The propellers that were mentioned too. For me, I am picturing something that is man made. I'm picturing something that is like a gas-filled vehicle, which would explain like the balloon-like sort of shape, and then also having that directionality with the propellers to kind of propel it along. So but again, I don't know.
Right. And I guess the idea here, I mean, we're several months later, like you said. So is this an... we're going to get into the theories in a second here, but this is where it gets weird for me, because if this is a program, I mean, California, I mean, it wasn't exactly Silicon Valley yet there in the 1890s, but definitely innovation happening. And so if there was going to be some sort of a secretive program developing aircraft, that would make sense that it would be there. But then you see it popping up starting in Oklahoma, and that is where... That's where things start
Missouri,
to get mucky, start
Oklahoma.
To get murky.
This next one that you're going to read here is really cool, because we have a new sort of a new aspect to the phenomena.
A new aspect of the phenomena. So this one was titled Airship in Oklahoma, published in the Guthrie Daily Leader, April 14th of 1897, Oklahoma. Mr. Wiggins of Norman, a church member and duly sober, is the one who reported this sighting.
Incredible witness.
So April 13th. Was when this actually came out, published on the 14th the following day. It goes as follows. Intense excitement prevailed here Friday night, owing to the appearance of the strange aerial craft. T.J.J. Wiggins, assistant cashier of the Norman State Bank, and one of the most prominent citizens of the country, a devout churchman and day reader in the local episcopal body, was nearly startled out of his wits Friday night as he was returning from prayer meeting, about 9:30, by the strange antics of what he at first supposed was an evening star, but which on closer observation proved to be some sort of long, dark object with an exceedingly bright and glittering light, pursuing a very erratic course, but in a general northeasterly direction. The craft, or whatever the strange body may have been, moved in a zigzag course, and the occasional flashes of red light along its sides only helped it to more completely mystify and terrorize the simple folks who had gathered to watch, to the number of 300 or 400 witnesses of the strange phenomena. The Adventists, who had been holding a protracted meeting here, are highly wrought up over the occurrence, and all manner of prophecies are being made regarding the beneficial and sinister influence of the strange visitor, until timid persons are well nigh distracted.
Okay. That's an interesting phraseology there.
Interesting end phrasing for this report. But 300 to 400 witnesses, that is the highest, that's a lot of people.
Highest count so far. And, you know, it's really cool. So this idea that the craft is zigzagging along in this trajectory of a northeasterly sort of pattern, doesn't that just remind you of the way that a sailboat tacks?
Yes.
And, like, goes, like, you know, like, you have, and, like, I'm just picturing, you're like, what if those like wings, quote unquote, or those like side things are sails. They're not wings. They're like trying to help with the wind patterns and like, and the propeller. It sounds like it should be something in the water. You know what I mean? Like, doesn't that just remind you of a, anyways.
Absolutely. And I love that you just said that, because I just feel like even the word airship in general is so fascinating, because of course this is before the coining of the phrase UFO, long before UAP. And of course, when you're, and before airplanes, of course. And so when you're looking at something in the sky, it's like something's traveling. Mm-hmm. It's carrying presumably passengers. There's no, there's nothing else that you could, of course it's going to resemble a ship in the air in some sort of in some way. And I just find that to be fascinating, because
it's like Castle in the Sky.
It's
stuff,
very much like that.
Like, I don't know.
So you're sort of picturing it as these wings, what appear to be wings, could essentially lift up, like change their angle, very much like even like when you look at it on the wing of an airplane and just like the things kind of move up and down, but this would move a little differently, so it would catch wind on one side of the craft or the other. I wonder if that was part of tested technology for some of these early airships, because it doesn't get more steampunk than that. It's literally a giant sailboat in the sky.
Yeah. Okay, so we're gonna actually be moving to a different state for this next account here. It was reported in Smithville, Kentucky, on April 21st, and this was from the Breckenridge News. And the byline reads here, so the article is called They Saw It. Just It, which is kind of weird.
It.
This was a phenomenon. This is a national thing at this point. It says here, the byline, Colonel Bennett Young and others watch the strange flying machine drop a letter down. Smithfield man claims to have picked it up Friday night. Are they pipe dreams? Question mark.
Interesting.
From the Louisville Dispatch. And the article goes as follows. Mr. W.H. Smithers of Smithfield was in the city yesterday and says that the airship passed over the town Friday night. He says there's no doubt about it, for he got a letter which was dropped from the aerial monster. Mr. Smithers gave the dispatch the letter, which explains more about the airship than has ever been given before. The writer says there are only two in the craft, himself and a companion, and that they cannot come down because they have dropped out too much ballast.
Okay.
From this, it is evident that the machine is to some extent propelled by gas, and the letter goes as follows. To whom it may concern, we are in the greatest trouble. We, myself and companion, are way up in the air in an airship. Perhaps someone has seen us and cannot come down. The last time we were on the earth was when we lighted at Lake Michigan about 3 weeks ago. In our attempt to rise, we threw out too much ballast and our ship went up so fast it almost took our breath. We have reached a strata of air which seemed to keep the ship from going higher, for it has not ascended for several days. We have tried every way to cause it to descend, but the machinery is on top and we cannot get to it from the basket. Oh, the horror.
Terrifying.
He goes on to say, what will ever become of us? Our provisions are giving out and starvation is staring us in the face. If the receiver of this letter will send a balloon out after our craft and rescue us, we will give him a fortune, for we are both rich.
Okay.
Enticing. The ship was made in an old barn in southern Illinois, and for fear that someone would steal our ideas, we managed to keep it a secret until we started on our aerial voyage. This was about a month ago, and since then we have been on the earth only 3 times, although before we threw out the ballast, we could alight as often as we desired. The ship is a success, but unless we are given assistance, we are lost. Yours in trouble, Samuel Hagen.
Fascinating.
So that's the end of the letter there. The article does go on to say, Dr. J.W. Blanton and L.J. Abergust, two of the most reputable residents at Lachland, called at the office of the Louisville Dispatch last evening and said that they had both witnessed a strange sight. At first, their story was laughed at and was only regarded as a joke, but both men were so sincere in their expressions and offered to bring 40 or 50 of the most truthful men in their districts to testify to the fact. Dr. Blanton and Mr. Argabust were just coming out of the hall at Pleasure Ridge Park at about 8 o'clock, where they had been holding a meeting of the Free Turnpike Company, which Colonel Bennett Young, the most prominent attorney of the city, had presided over. Quote, we were just walking towards the front gate, said Dr. Blanton, when we were suddenly startled by hearing a sharp whirring sound, which attracted our attention towards the heavens. we all looked up simultaneously and saw shooting at a frightful speed the bright glare of a lighted lamp. Everybody was at first frightened at the queer sight, and we thought it was a comet until we met Mr. Smithers, who showed us the letter which he had found. Then we concluded it was beyond doubt the mysterious airship. We watched the light for several seconds and finally saw it disappear over the Indiana hills. The wind was blowing at a stiff gale against the ship, but from the way she was spinning, there must have been a considerable force to carry it along. The two men said they would be willing to take a solemn oath in substantiation of their story and said that Colonel Young would also say the same thing.
Very curious indeed.
End of the article. I know. So we get an actual letter, which gives us more of a timeline and perhaps actually lends itself to the idea that you said this is multiple airships, not the same one, because these people claim, like Samuel Hagen claims to have been in the sky for a month.
Right.
And that it was built in Illinois, which kind of like makes me think that it isn't plausible that they went all the way from Illinois to California to be sighted over the bay like that.
No, that's so a long... Been, that's, yeah,
so this could be like different phenomena, but still the same sort of thing, which is really cool.
But it's like, I mean, yeah, it's just... I mean, that is very cool. The prospect of obviously multiple different, you know, inventors taking this upon themselves and trying to fly around the country on in massive dirigible-like craft.
There's also those
who don't believe that was just, just frankly, like, not necessarily possible to the extent that we are getting the reported sightings across the entire country, that it just would have been. But I mean, I don't know if I buy that. That's just what a lot of different, you know, we'll get into the theories in a second here.
I feel like that's plausible to a certain degree. And it kind of speaks to the idea that in this day and age, especially like, you know, the turn of the 20th century, there was a lot of people that were latching onto modernism, technology, different sorts of like, obviously like, vehicular technology in particular was something that was being honed in on.
Sure.
And there was lots of people that were simultaneously trying to invent and patent the same things. Like, you know, like the light bulb, for example. All these things that were just coming into existence at this time. And I think, like, it could be the case that, like, he even says here, he's like, the Samuel Hagen, alleged Samuel Hagen that wrote the letter, he said that they have hidden this thing because of fear of copycats.
Right.
Which, again, like, kind of speaks to the age.
And we do have evidence to kind of go along with that and suggest that, yeah, a lot of people were trying to hide very similar technologies. And there was a tragic case in the associated with the Canadian press and the Arctic that we'll get into.
Totally.
Did we want to continue on as we move eastwardly in a zigzag fashion, though, before?
Let's do it.
Okay.
Let's go to Minnesota.
Let's get over to Minnesota. Oh, and I just want to give a shout out to those Timberwolves, the Minnesota Timberwolves. I'm rooting for them, but man, oh man, oh, they're down 0-2. That's rough. If we have listeners in Minnesota, man, yeah, reach out to me. I can talk you off the ledge. Okay. So here we are, Minnesota. This one was titled, Was It an Airship? Question mark. Published in the St. Paul Globe, December 7th of 1897. And in Oddities in Print, the title reads as, Strange Light Engineer Hussey saw in the saw in the heavens. That is literally what it says. Strange Light Engineer Hussey.
Saw. Like, this engineer saw the strange light.
This is just like a...
this is such a...
So wait a second. You're just like a really slutty engineer?
He might be. But I think it was like, you know how like they would like shorten stuff for like byline, like subtitles and like, you know, so they're trying to get the main point across. But I think the main point got lost.
Oh, wait a second. Wait a second. His last name is Hussey.
Yeah. Yeah. The engineer's name is John J. Hussey.
Like, he's not promiscuous or anything.
He might be. I'm not making any judgments.
I'm totally joking. Okay, here we go. Engineer John J. Hussey. Okay, sorry. Engineer John J. Hussey, whose engine pulled the day train down from Dulch yesterday over eastern Minnesota, brings news of what is supposed to have been an airship which soared over northern Minnesota early Sunday morning and which was seen by a number of reputable men. Before the sun had risen Sunday morning, the night express on the eastern was eating up the distance. Engineer Hussey noticed in the neighborhood of Mansfield Hill, some 150 miles from here, the strange-looking aerial body. Hussey called the attention of his fireman, John Henderson, and the two agreed it was not a star. It was a large, white, long light, which seemed surrounded by some dark objects. and it appeared to be moving in a northwesterly direction. While Hussey did not give it as his positive opinion that the strange object was indeed an airship, he is at a loss to explain what it was. It was still dark, he said, quote, when we pulled into Mansfield Hill and I noticed the queer thing, whatever it was. I called the attention of my fireman Henderson to it, and later, when stopping at the station, to the conductor, J.W. Gilboy. He was at a loss to give it a name, though he agreed also it was not a star. The airship, if it was such a thing, moved toward Deerwood, where night operator Mason, who is quite a practical joker, still says in earnest that he saw the aerial wanderer itself. Agent Campbell at Moutley, a night operator Harris of the Northern Pacific, as well as a number of other townspeople, claimed that they saw the ship for nearly an hour before it finally disappeared. Harris continued to say the object appeared to be about the size of the moon, but that he still saw it after daylight. Interesting. We're moving past nighttime sightings. So there was no chance to mistake it for the moon or a star. Along the line, we found the operators talking about having seen the airship. They had heard of its presence from other operators, even along the line of the Great Northern and Northern Pacific. We pulled into Dulch, and night operator Evans told us that he had advised by a number of his friends along the line that they had seen an airship. When conductor Gilboy and I told him what we had seen, he was convinced that there was such a thing in the neighborhood. One sarcastic fellow, when asked over the wire if he had seen the ship, replied, "Yes, on it appeared the legend Klondike or Bust." That joke is lost on me. Several of the more imaginative of the boys described the exact shape and the color of the light, etc. But I do not take much stock in all of that. I do say it was a peculiar object indeed, whatever it was. That is a strange report.
Yeah, that is a strange one for sure. And like the idea,
So it's a series of railway employees kind of pontificating on what this could be.
Yeah, no, the Klondike or Bust, that's like it would be like their version of a bumper sticker, essentially.
Oh, Klondike or Bust.
Because like the gold rush happened.
That makes sense. That makes sense. I get it.
That is pretty funny.
There you go. Thanks for clarifying.
But it was from a sarcastic fellow, so we shouldn't take that with again, another boulder size grain of salt.
And of course, you know, we're going to get into some wild theories because people have posited a lot of different craziness for this. But, you know, so far, nobody is being attempted to be abducted. Nobody is actually, like, you know, coming into any specific spotlight as if one of these craft is trying to pinpoint anything on the ground, even though the phrasing being used is, like, hovering over the earth.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, technically that's what's happening. But the way that reads is like, you know, that it's something that isn't earthbound in any regard.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Very odd. But right now it just seems like a lot of witnesses of just like things that shouldn't have been invented yet, but just they happen to have been pulled off.
And, you know, that again, like I said, is debatable. I do have some examples just a little bit further along here, but we had a couple more sightings and like, I to be honest, this next one is from the same, you know, the same book here from Adam's book, and it's not really in the flap, but I thought it was cool because it again talks about it's as if something dropped out of the sky. It was an eyeglass in particular.
Yeah.
And it's just interesting because again, it just speaks to the idea that there's a lot of activities going on up there and not everyone really knows what's happening. But it just, yeah, it was kind of interesting. But I won't really read that one. We've read quite a bit of these already. But yeah, no, I think there's a lot to discuss here. I think you can make a case that, yes, in fact, you could maybe pull off something like this or try to pull something off like this.
Sure.
And it could have ended in disaster for these people, such as the Samuel Hagen example. But let's get into it. Because from the 15th century onward, there were airships, whether they were practical applications or just the design, they had been started to develop.
Sure.
And this guy, Francisco Lana de Terce, he is one of the most notable examples of early modern airship designer, like post-Renaissance airship designer.
Interesting.
And he is actually commonly noted as the father of aeronautics, which is really cool. He wrote this book, Prodromo? I don't know. So it basically was a book that contained a bunch of inventions, designs, and ideas, and the most famous of which was this design for a flying ship. So Terzi, like I mentioned, he was Italian. He was a Jesuit priest, actually, and a professor of physics and mathematics. So he was very much intrigued with human flight, and he came up with all these designs starting in the 1670s. And I thought that was really crazy. Cool.
That is really cool.
Yeah. There was more like recent, like I think I kind of sort of alluded to this one. Yeah. The Gifford airship. So this is more recent, 1850s, and it was credited as the first powered steerable airship designed to actually fly in the sky. And it featured, this is a quote here, it featured an elongated hydrogen-filled envelope that tapered to a point at each end. From this was suspended a long beam with a triangular sail-like rudder at the aft end, and beneath the beam, a platform for the pilot and the steam engine.
Totally. Very cool.
That was actually just pulled from Wikipedia there.
Yeah.
We'll definitely be posting an image of this design because it very, in my mind, very much closely aligns with the scale and the shape of what's been reported, especially in this, the flap that we're talking about specifically
here.
And obviously could have been modified, could have been, you know, altered in some way or shape or form. So this dirigible, as it was so called, it was successfully flown first September of 1852. Where Gifford himself actually ascended from the Hippodrome of Paris and landed at Trappe some 17 miles away. It was counted as a success, even though the airship lacked the power to navigate a circle against the wind to return to its starting point. So again, that speaks to the limitations as to how much power was involved with these things.
17 miles, though, is actually like a decent, that's a decent distance, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not enough to pilot across the entire country in the U.S., but it's, you know, it's not nothing.
It's not nothing. It's crazy. This picture here, I'm like looking at it, I'm like, there's no way you would ever get me in this shirt.
There's absolutely no chance. And we will post this, obviously, so you guys can see this dirigible. So yeah, okay, so you've proved, I knew, and you know, I read through our notes, I knew this was coming up later.
Oh yeah.
But I mean, the thing to me is that we're seeing something that's clearly a much further advanced version of this, just a few decades later, with electricity, with lights, unless these are, you know, kerosene lamps that they're having on these things, which would be dangerous and crazy.
And, well, it happened with like balloons and stuff.
Yeah, so, and
like,
what happened to the Hindenburg, little missy?
Took you a minute there.
Yeah. Okay.
The Hindenburg.
All right, everyone. Well, that kind of brings us to the end of the stories we wanted to discuss for this part one of the Phantom Airship Flap. But I can't wait to get into some of these theories, and we're going to tee it up for you now so you guys can kind of like think on this a little bit before we release part two. I think the main question we're asking here in this series of accounts is this possibly attributed to one single airship that managed to actually travel these vast distances across the country in some sort of reconnaissance mission or just a straight up test, or is it a series of individual inventors that happen to be pulling off crazy things at the exact same time? Because that to me seems a little bit strange. Another one of the things we're going to get into as well is whether or not, and this is of course for Into the Portal, one of my favorite angles of this, as Amber no doubt rolls her eyes with her eyes closed, but the interdimensional phenomena angle, because of course on some of our favorite websites that dive into paranormal phenomena, when referencing this historical mystery, there's some ideas that possibly these craft are coming from places from beyond, this idea of sort of the castle in the sky, like you alluded to earlier in the episode. And we've talked about different things like this before too, even like the idea of like sky beasts, you know, different sort of phenomena, entities in the sky, and whether or not these craft could be possibly coming from one of these similar or same locations. Another thing is whether or not Samuel Hagen was actually a real person.
Yeah, we gotta get into that.
Mm-hmm. We have that letter dropped, and that was like the one solid connection that we're dealing with here. And I think that's utterly fascinating. And then, of course, we will be touching on a few different really specific and unique stories that delve into potentially this being a extraterrestrial phenomena for at least some of the sightings, creating this just cornucopia of high strangeness that has to do with the Phantom Airship.
Yeah, that could, yeah, there's so many different possibilities, so many different rabbit holes to dive down. I will kind of add to that as well. I don't know if you might have loosely referenced this, but the idea that this could be something government related. This could be something that was funded, it was a secret project, and maybe they had multiple installations working on, because the government does like to do that, where they will compartmentalize projects, and there could be people doing the same thing in multiple different agencies, and they have no idea, because they have no communications, and that is intentional. It is to keep information segregated.
The early days of this
time. Could have been something like that. There's so many different fun things, and I will kind of add as well another angle that could be foreign espionage. we do have an example from, and I'm just thinking about it off the top of my head because I have been browsing through this Hodderties in print in preparation for this episode, and I did find an interesting story of potential Japanese incursions on the Pacific coast. So
yeah,
so we have a lot of different things that we want to get into for part two, and we're just so grateful for you guys to join us for this part one as we
absolutely
bumble our way through this hilarious series of odd occurrences and strange happenings in the 1890s.
Yeah.
What day is it today?
What day is it today? You can probably tell, you guys, that we're a tiny bit rusty, but like Amber said, so stoked to have you with us for this part one, and no doubt we will be able to ease back into getting into the flow of Into the Portal once again. And just thank you all so much for continuing to listen and continuing to reach out. We do have people reach out on Instagram at Into the Portal Podcast on Instagram. And of course, we do still have our Patreon up and running and some content that we're developing for Patreon. And we're just so grateful and thankful for all of our supporters on there, especially our producers. Big, big shout out to the absolute legend, Adam Kellums. That guy is just the best dude in the entire universe. And then also we have Kitsune as well. Justin, just awesome. I'm at a loss for words, honestly.
I know. It's been so great just to see the continued support, and it really warms our heart and keeps the fires burning in the inspiration departments and stuff, even though we really haven't had a lot of time. We're just grateful that now that we have this summer break, that we're not bombarded with a ton of schoolwork and a ton of life stuff.
It's not just pure school all the time, yeah.
I can come home from work and turn off, and I don't have a million assignments, like, on my back.
We can actually enjoy watching The Proof is Out There and get inspired for some... And actually, there are a few stories on that that have inspired us. We're not going to do the exact ones, but they've led us down some rabbit holes for a few different episodes that we're planning. Should we tease anything possibly or save it? Okay. Well, stay tuned for the socials then, because there might be some teases on there, and we haven't been super active, but we do still have it. And Instagrams probably are still kind of primary, you know, contact for the show and where we post stuff. So yeah,
or come
follow us. Yeah, hit us up on email too at intotheportalmailbox@gmail.com. Let us know if you have ideas. And we are talking about reviving Film Friday as well. Really excited about that. We do have We do have a list of...
I think it's our favorite.
It was our favorite, really, and a handful of people that did that do really love Film Friday. So, I mean, we've been watching a lot of awesome old movies, and we got into Svengoolie recently. So,
Who out there is a Svengoolie fan?
Hit us up.
And if you are... Why didn't you tell us that this thing existed? Because we're just getting into it this year, and I feel like we...
Especially if you're a Chicago area listener. We've lost years we could have been watching Ghoulie.
Yeah, love it.
So the High Strangeness is back in the ITP household. We're not in our usual studio. We're sitting on top of a towel here with a bunch of makeshift soundproofing going on around us, but stoked to be back with you guys. So thank you again for listening, and until next time on Into the Portal.
Your gateway to the bizarre.